This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
This is Alex Smith of Radio EcoShock as we continue to investigate the role of warming oceans from climate change. Our guest is Dr. Alistair Hobday, Senior Research Scientist at CSIRO Marine and Atmospheric Research in Australia. Welcome to Radio EcoShock, sir.
Hi, Alex.
Well, first of all, Alistair, can you tell us a little bit about the strange weather going on in Australia recently?
This year, Australia's in the grip of a very strong La Nina, which is a condition when the surface waters around the northern part of Australia are much warmer than usual. Warm water obviously allows more water to evaporate from the ocean into the atmosphere, and coupled with some cyclone activity, that's led to a very wet summer, I guess, for us down here.
And we've just heard from Dr. Josh Willis about the mechanics of how the ocean heats as greenhouse gases in the atmosphere change the energy balance of Earth. So that leads me to wonder whether some of this Australian storm activity is related to a warmer ocean in your area.
While it's hard to pin any single weather event on climate change, given that a warm ocean is occurring as a response to the increased greenhouse gases, you'd have to think that increased cyclone activity is a consequence of that warmer ocean. However, when we look in the historical record, there's been no clear trend in an increase in cyclone activity over the last 40 years or so. So that area is still controversial about whether we're seeing more cyclones. However, predictions from climate models suggest that we are going to see more intense events. And so this most recent activity in our summer is consistent with that expectation that we will see stronger and stronger cyclone activity.
Well, let's get to some of your own work. What sort of research is being done in your facility about the ocean and climate?
We have both physical oceanographers who are working on the actual physical changes, such as how is the temperature or the salinity or the pH of the ocean changing. And then within my team, we're mainly biologists who are looking at the impacts of those physical changes on the biology.
Well, let's get to some specific cases. What is happening for the species of the oceans as the water gets hotter?
On both the east and west coasts of Australia, we have currents that flow from the equator towards the poles. And those currents are bringing warm water then to the southern latitudes. A consequence of global warming is that not only is the water coming south already hot, global warming is somewhat heating it. So we're getting an enhanced warming on the both coasts of Australia. On the southeast region, it's recognised that this is one of the climate hotspots for the ocean. These hotspots are areas where the temperature is increasing faster than other places. And as a result, we're seeing some pretty dramatic changes in biology at all levels in the food chain. For example, we're seeing phytoplankton species that are usually found in tropical waters occurring into southern Tasmania. A consequence of those phytoplankton blooms is that they also use oxygen and they can make waters where you're fish farming more challenging for the fish that are living there. Slightly higher in the food chain, we're seeing things like zooplankton species also moving further south. And then the things that feed on the zooplankton are things like coastal fish species. And some recent work that we completed last year showed that about 43 out of 180 coastal species were moving south into southern Tasmanian waters. So these are really dramatic changes in the ecosystem.
So there's a migration of ocean species perhaps toward the poles. Is that possible?
That's right. The problem is on the coast of Australia is once you get to Tasmania and the southern part of our continent, you run out of suitable habitat for many species. So if you're a fish that needs to live in water that's, say, 20 metres deep, you can move southward along the coast of Australia. But once you get to Tasmania, it's a long way south before you ever run into 20 metres water depth again. So animals are being squeezed at the southern end of their range, and that's bad, and that will probably lead to some reductions in population size, and ultimately it may lead to extinction in some species.
And we hear very little about what's going on in the Southern Ocean, especially as we get down around Antarctica. Can you tell us about some of the changes that you've heard of there?
Around the Antarctic Peninsula, which is the connection to Antarctica, that if you followed North America through South America to the Antarctic continent, that little finger of land there is experiencing very rapid atmospheric warming. As a result of that, we're seeing melting ice, declining glaciers, in terms of how far they penetrate into the ocean, and that's having impacts on biology in those areas that I read about in the literature, but my team doesn't work directly in that area. Below the Australian waters, the Antarctic continent there is seeing increased carbon dioxide levels in the ocean, which means lower pH, and that's affecting the growth rate of some phytoplankton species. So as you've said, you know, the effects of global warming are both on temperature and in the ocean. It's on the effect of actually dissolving carbon dioxide in the ocean, which changes the pH. So we get a very double whammy effect in the ocean.
And what about the coral? I admit I'm a little bit ignorant about how ocean heating might affect the coral. Is it happening? Does it affect the coral?
Yeah, the main effect on the coral is through a process called coral bleaching. When the temperature gets above a critical threshold, and in some of our Australian waters that's above, say, 31 or 32 degrees Celsius, the coral tends to lose its symbiotic bacteria that it uses for photosynthesis. And that expelling of that bacteria from the coral tissues kind of turns them a whitey colour, and that's why it's called coral bleaching. Once they've excluded that bacteria, they're not able to function, and the coral can die afterwards. So this coral bleaching has become much more common since the 1980s, and it's very well correlated with increasing ocean temperature. So the warming ocean makes the coral more susceptible to this bleaching, and therefore the coral habitat can degrade after that. If temperatures continue to warm, bleaching becomes more and more frequent, and the coral has no opportunity to recover between these warm water events each summer.
And how important is that to marine life?
That will really change the structure of coral reefs as we know it. It won't mean a complete disappearance of coral, it will just change in form. So at the moment, a healthy coral reef might have only 10% algae growing on it, and the habitat will not be 90% coral. And so the mix of fishes are mainly coral fishes rather than algal fishes. However, with increased bleaching frequency, you see that kind of habitat shift from being coral dominated to being algal dominated. And there will be a shift in the biology that's found on those reefs as a result. So we'll still have reefs, they'll just look different to how we experience them today. And as with many things in climate change, it's just recognising that there'll be a change in conditions that results. It doesn't mean complete loss of systems, it means a change in them. And that's a decision we have to think about as society. Are we prepared to put up with that change system?
And what about the impacts of warming oceans on the commercial fisheries? We've got 1 billion people are dependent on marine life for their protein sources. Are we seeing changes for the commercial fishermen?
Yeah, we're seeing changes in species that commercial fishermen rely on. Again, using Australia as an example, on the East Coast, large species like tuna, marlins and swordfish, for example, are being found further south as the waters warm. So for fishermen operating out of northern ports, that might mean they have to travel further south in order to catch their fish. That can make it economically more expensive in terms of your fuel bills, the number of days you need to be at sea to catch your fish. And so the fishermen are confronted with a choice of, well, maybe we need to move to a different port so that we're closer to where these fish stocks are. So that occurs if there's a distribution change. There can be an economic penalty to the fishermen until they relocate. However, climate may also lead to changes in abundance of species. And in that case, there'll be real problems for food security in that we just won't have the same fish stocks anymore. However, it's really uncertain at the moment how commercial fish species will respond in terms of abundance. We have very few examples around Australia where we know that abundance is changing as a result of climate change.
And I realize the oceans are huge and, you know, there isn't one standard temperature. The temperatures are different all over the place. But I'm just, as a beginner, trying to grasp how much are the oceans warming. Can you give us examples of temperature changes? Is it big? Is it small? What's happening?
In the average, it sometimes seems quite small. Over the last 100 years, the average for the global ocean has been about 0.6 of a degree over that 100-year period. In places where the ocean is warming more quickly, though, in southeast Australia or southwest Australia, for example, the rate of warming can be a bit over 2 degrees over the past 100 years. So I guess the point of saying that is, yes, there is quite a lot of variation in the amount of heating. In some cases, it's 4 times faster than average. And then, of course, there'll be places in the ocean where the warming is much less than average. I think people who are sceptical about climate change will often say, well, in my region of the ocean, we're not observing any change at all. Therefore, I don't believe in climate change. However, you have to look at the whole picture and recognize that the average overall is increasing in some spots faster than others. And it's quite easy to explain why it is not warming quickly in some areas. For example, if you have a water mass that's next to land, you know that in the afternoon when the land heats up, you can have a sea breeze. And that means the wind is blowing from the ocean onto land as the hot air over land rises. That wind blowing onto land can lead to mixing in the coastal ocean, and that mixing brings cold water to the surface. So that ocean next to the land may in fact look like it's getting cooler as the winds get stronger. So we have increasing winds as a result of climate change actually leading to cooling in the adjacent ocean, and that can complicate the picture.
And a lot of our excess heat as the climate warms is going into the oceans, but isn't there going to be a point where the oceans become, instead of a heat sink, a heat emitter? Isn't that the projection of the climate science?
As the heat goes into the atmosphere, it is absorbed by the ocean, and it will take some 30 to 60 years for that carbon dioxide that we're putting into the ocean now to be fully absorbed. In the case of the heat, it can be some 400 or 500 years before the heat basically balances out. So the ocean is very slow to catch up. However, the heat capacity of the ocean is such that it could continue to store all of the heat that goes into the atmosphere. It would just be 400 or 500 years behind that in terms of catching up.
So we may be changing the climate half a millennia away.
In terms of the carbon dioxide that's going into the ocean, that's already changed the chemistry of the ocean, and we haven't seen the kind of pH levels for something over 800,000 years, possibly, you know, even out to millions of years. So the pH is really changing, and it won't return to normal for thousands of years, even if we shut off carbon dioxide levels today. Some level of persistent change is inevitable. The challenge now for countries around the world is how to reduce those carbon emissions and minimize the damage that we're going to see.
This is Radio EcoShock with Dr. Alistair Hobday from Australia. I want to say we have a lot of podcast listeners in Australia, but our biggest audience is in the Northern Hemisphere, and we don't get a lot of news from down under. Could you pick out a few key science stories regarding this subject that you might have noticed?
One really neat example is how turtles are being affected by warming oceans and warming atmospheric temperatures. As your listeners may know, turtles nest on sandy beaches, and the temperature of the beach determines whether or not the eggs are male or female when they hatch. As you increase the temperature of the beach, and this is happening as a result of global warming, you can shift the sex ratio so that mostly the eggs hatch as females. If you continue to rise temperatures, in fact, we'll end up with populations of turtles that are completely female. One strategy that might be used to mitigate that is that, for example, if the nesting beach has a dark-coloured sand on it that is heating up more rapidly, you could actually replace that sand with a cooler, lighter-coloured sand surface and try and preserve the ratio of males to females. Other things that people are doing are planting trees at the back of beaches so that they receive shade in the afternoon and don't heat up as much. If all of those things fail to preserve sex ratios, you may have to relocate eggs from turtles that are on very hot beaches and move them to a location that's actually cooler.
Wow.
Please,
give me another example.
Other examples are with seabirds, like little penguins, which nest in southeast Australia. They nest in artificial burrows in some places, which have been put in place to replace habitat loss. As air temperatures rise, those burrows are becoming quite a bit hotter during the summer, and we've seen evidence of birds actually dying when temperatures get above 40 degrees Celsius, which is about 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Adaptation strategies for those birds include putting shade cloth over the top of the nesting areas, and you might even consider doing things like refrigerating burrows, for example, in the extreme case, to allow them to survive those very hot periods. So in the research we're doing, we're not only identifying what the impacts are on the animals or the fish or the birds, but trying to think about, given that impact, what's the adaptation strategy that we can implement to help them cope? And in terms of managing climate change, mitigation is what we're doing at a global level, trying to reduce greenhouse gases. But because that mitigation will take time, in the meantime, you have to put in place these adaptation strategies. And a lot of effort is going on in Australia and elsewhere into developing sensible adaptation strategies to help animals and even people survive in the face of a changing climate.
It almost sounds like nature is going to need human help just to survive the time until we can get our act together, let's say.
Yeah, for some species, they will definitely need intervention, and this is where adaptation can become very tricky in deciding which species need intervention and which ones you can actually afford to do it for. You know, I think it would be a very poor choice if we as a society decided, let's do adaptation everywhere, because we just simply don't know enough to manipulate the systems and help every single species of animal. You know, in the case of fishes, there are some 20,000 species of fish around the world. We can't do an adaptation strategy for all of those fish. So it will be picking particular ones that might be valuable to humans or are particularly threatened, like seabirds or marine mammals or turtles, and choosing to intervene to help those. And the adaptation strategy should really try and give them just some extra time. The rate of climate change that we're seeing at the moment is just much, much faster than anything these species have experienced in, you know, millions of years. So if we can give them just a bit more time, maybe they will be able to adapt on their own. And so many of the strategies that we're thinking about are just trying to slow down the effect of the climate change that these animals experience and give them that extra time to adapt on their own.
Have you seen projections of how much the ocean could warm this century?
Yes, the IPCC is perhaps the world authority on issuing those projections. And depending on how much carbon dioxide is put into the atmosphere in the coming decades, we'll see warming of about 1.8 to about 5.5 degrees of temperature in the ocean.
In the ocean? I thought that applied to the land base, but we could get up to 5 degrees C change in the ocean in this century, they're saying?
Yeah, that's right. In some of the hot spots around Australia, for example, or even there are other ones off Japan or the northeast coast of the US, we're expecting, if carbon dioxide emissions continue to rise, that we'll see temperatures increasing up to those levels. And that's for more open ocean environments. In inland seas, the heating could be quite a bit warmer. So, for example, in closed bays, Sea of Cortez, parts of the Mediterranean could warm up much more dramatically than that. Anywhere where you've got a very shallow water mass or water body, the atmospheric temperatures have a lot more influence.
And I've heard some scientists, including Dr. Peter Ward, suggest that we could even see a change in the sea life to an extreme event, perhaps because also of the acidification. And so, you know, how bad a scenario is this if we just let it all roll on and burn all the fossil fuels we've got? What happens to warming oceans?
It means things will be very different than they are today. That said, terrestrial landscapes are very different today to what they were 100 or 200 years ago. We've modified our landscapes in a really big way. We put in farms, we do clear felling, all kinds of agricultural practices are changing the land. So in essence, changes to the ocean might just look like changes on land. However, that change can be very difficult to cope with. So the risk for humanity is that the changes are such that we are not actually able to adapt to it. That's in a practical sense. In just a biodiversity sense, those changes will mean that some species are not able to adapt and they may go extinct. And as you would know, this kind of climate change has been referred to as the, you know, the sixth great mass extinction. And in this case, it will be caused by humans. However, our evidence for claiming that, I think, is a bit weaker at the moment. So I'm definitely not an alarmist about that. I would just make the point that climate change will change the ocean as we know it today. And it may change it in ways that we wish had not happened.
What have I missed, Dr. Hobde? Is there something you'd like to add as we wrap up for our listeners?
Climate change is not coming in the future. We've got evidence that the climate has been changing very dramatically over the past 40 years already. We've seen that in responses of fishes, of birds, of mammals, of reptiles. And so the idea that we can just defer our decision-making because climate change is something that's coming in the future is not the case. It's really disappointing that many of the actions of today's generation are deferring decisions to our children or to our grandchildren. And I think they'll look back at us and think, you guys knew about climate change back in the year 2011. You deferred the choice to do anything about it onto us. And I think that's a really lazy decision. And so I don't think we'll be viewed very favorably by our children and grandchildren unless we take a bit more action than we're currently doing. And I definitely am not in a position where I want to disappoint my children. So that's in part that motivates my behavior change.
Me too. From Australia, our guest is from the top Australian scientific organization, CSIRO, Dr. Alistair Hobde. Thank you so much for spending time with us.
Hey, great to talk with you, Alex. Thank you.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.